Hello, and welcome to You've Got Time, an Orange is the New Black podcast. I'm your host, Erin Quayle, and this week our intro is going to be short and sweet. I talked to two of my favorite people for the podcast this week. They're Orange is the New Black mega fans. Their names are Carla and Chan, and they're also, in addition to being mega fans and my favorite people, they're also one of the best couples I know. So Carla has worked, in the past she worked at a school for children with emotional and mental health issues, and we kind of get into that in the podcast a little bit, as well as just kind of a female perspective on the whole thing, things that are going on in Litchfield. We get into safety in the workplace. We talk about a little bit of sympathy for Piscatella, which I think was a really interesting part of our conversation. And of course, you know, since a lot of the episode focused on hygiene, female hygiene, we talk a little bit about periods. So, that's definitely something that we get into a little bit. And it was definitely a really fun talk. And I hope you enjoy it. So for next week, some really exciting things are happening. We're shooting to have a special episode on solitary confinement with a couple just, you know, plain interviews with people that are in activist groups about solitary confinement. I think I mentioned a few of them a couple weeks ago, and so stay tuned for that. In addition, next week's episode focuses on something that I'm actually, I have a lot of experience in, which is opiate addiction. And, if you've seen the episode or haven't seen the episode, there's a character that kind of struggles with addiction. And we are going to go a little deep on that because that's something that I have a lot of stuff to talk about. So we definitely recommend that you listen to Planet Money's recent episode called Hooked on Heroin. It's an 18-minute podcast episode, and it is really, it's one of the best things I've ever heard explaining the opiate epidemic in America, and I highly recommend that everyone listen to it. So we're going to post that on both Twitter and Facebook for your listening pleasure before the next podcast is up next week. And so, like I said, exciting things are happening, and we're trying to bring more, more content to, you know, give the stuff that's happening on Orange is the New Black some sort of grounded basis in you know, what's going on in the world today. So we hope that you enjoy that stuff. And as always, if you have any questions, comments, concerns, anything you want to just say hi, reach out to us on Twitter at You've Got Time Pod, on Facebook at facebook.com/You've Got Time Podcast, and on Gmail at You've Got Time Podcast@gmail.com. So I hope you enjoy the episode, and keep an eye out for all the exciting stuff coming up in the next few weeks. Thanks so much, guys. Bye. Well, so, I guess we're talking about episode 5 of Orange is the New Black, and I actually don't, I think it's called We'll Always Have Baltimore, because, you know, obviously Caputo goes to Baltimore to correct a con with Linda, who I don't like. Linda is awful. But more, the backstory in the episode is Ramos, and I think we should definitely start there. And she is, I don't know, I like her. The second time watching it, she's one of the funnier characters on the show, I think. For a while they had her as like comic relief on the show, and her flashback is definitely one of the funnier flashbacks too, but she's putting herself in danger kind of in this episode, and I don't know how you guys felt about her here.
I don't know if she intentionally put herself in danger. Like, she's used to always using her brain to kind of get out of things.
Well, her yeah. body, right?
Her brain and body, yeah. And then, you know, I think she just assumes people think that she doesn't know anything, mm-hmm. because she's, like, a prettier girl.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just thought it was really hilarious when she kept making these jokes, and they're like, oh my god, I'm kidding. So I think she's trying to make it, and she's using mm-hmm. what she's been given to her.
Mm-hmm. Because she is, like, one of the prettier people on the show, too. She's a very attractive lady. And she's, you know, she's really, I don't know, she's just really funny. I liked her a lot. But, and her flashback was definitely kind of a break from a lot of the heavier stuff that's been happening this season on the show, too. And, you know, she's, like, volunteering. I guess maybe she also kind of gets off on the thrill of it, too, because she was volunteering for the panty thing, even though she knew that it was going to be, you know, a bad situation. Nothing really seemed to go her way either. She kind of had issues with all of that too. So, but Carla, what do you think? How do you feel about her?
Yeah, I mean, the question of like, is she industrious or is she, mm-hmm. you know, not using her brain? But I think if you're put in a situation and you know this is what you're used to doing, or if you have a lack of stimulation or you don't have work to do or you don't have things That's to think true. About. Mm-hmm. What are you going to do with your time? Why not take a chance? And mm-hmm. it's more exciting.
Feel alive.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And use what you have.
Mm-hmm. And she did, like, over and over again in the flashback and in the prison, she was, like, using her sexuality. And that's what a lot of times, and Piper tries to do it, too. We'll talk a little bit about Piper, but she tries and fails. But she, you know, she uses, that's, like, a weapon that women have had for a long time. And one of the only things that a lot of women feel that they can use because we, you know, that's something that we have.
It's power.
And it is power. It's power in a lot of different ways. And Ramos definitely knows how to use it very well.
Well, she used, like, vulnerability, like, because mm-hmm. it wasn't like she was outwardly like, oh my god, look at me, I'm going to use my prowess as a female. She used her vulnerability, and people think that she's helpless.
Mm-hmm. True.
And her quick wits to kind of just, like, I mean, when that guy came up, and she's like, oh my god, you're a gardener, and mm-hmm. I just totally jumped into that.
That's true, yeah. She's very, like, adaptable to the mm-hmm. situation, like, and in her flashback, too, where she's in the car, and she's turning up the radio, she's trying to, like, figure out how to get out of the situation, and she still ends up with the car, because she kind of figures out, instead of getting out of the situation without, you know, getting caught, she gets what she wants, because she thinks so quickly, and people, like you said, they underestimate her, but they also treat her as, like, this wounded little bird because, oh, she's throwing up on the side of the road, oh, let's feel bad, but then she takes advantage of them, so. And I feel like, you know, a lot of women, you know, not a lot, but, well, maybe, I don't know. Women use that to their advantage sometimes. And she does that here, and I enjoyed her flashback a lot, because a lot of times the flashbacks are just, like, really sad, or, and we still don't know what she was arrested for. I mean, presumably it's some sort of thing to do with the guy that she got, the hot dad. What'd she say? She was like, you're like, even if they do look like a hot dad, I'm not gonna sleep with them or whatever. And so she clearly, I don't know, maybe gets in deeper with him, and that's what's going on with him. But she gets what she wants at the end of this episode. Although that one guard, we don't generally talk about, like, later in the season, because we're trying to stick episode to episode, but the one guard is kind of on to her now. So and he speaks Spanish, so you can't underestimate who speaks Spanish either, because everyone takes Spanish in high school. I think in episode or two, Piper was like, who Maria is talking to someone in Spanish, and Piper was like, I understood most of that. Yeah. You can't underestimate who speaks Spanish, because, you know, sometimes it's unexpected. But so for the rest of the women in the prison, you know, Ramos's story is kind of front and center here, but for the rest of the women, there's a lot of, like always on Orange is New Black, especially since they're working towards, like, bigger stories, the prison's getting worse. There's no maxi pads now. It's probably been like a couple weeks since the new inmates are in there. They're all getting on the same cycle. and there's no maxi pads, and everyone, it's, like, disgusting. Like, it's, I don't know. I can't, as a woman, I can't imagine that. And, like, I feel like a lot of times people feel squeamish talking about, like, their periods or whatever, but they really address it in, like, a good way here, because they're like, this is something that we need and we don't have access to it.
Yeah. I mean, because if we were in that situation right now in this room, three females, like, I have my period, can I borrow a tampon mm-hmm. or something? You would give it to me.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, it doesn't work that way in this episode.
Mm-hmm.
People are profiting off of it.
Mm-hmm.
They're finding ways around it. They're just... everyone's spending for themselves.
Yeah, and Cindy is trying to be very industrious by selling tampons for $5 each. One whole box costs $10. And then the one girl's like, I'll give you $3. But $3 for a tampon's a lot. But Carla, you were saying before we recorded that there was a recently in New York passed something that said
on Tuesday the city council passed approval for tampons to be used in public prison schools, or to be given free of charge, public prison schools, and I forget what other centers, but homeless shelters. Mm-hmm. Yep. So right there is like a big win for the idea that, you know, these are needed. They're just, mm-hmm. just like they said, just like toilet paper. Like, mm-hmm. that's how necessary they are. And so that's amazing. It's the first U.S. I guess state to do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, New York's been pretty, I mean, as far as I've seen in the news, has been pretty progressive in terms of things that they're trying to change in their system to make things better or make things more inclusive for everyone, because it's tough in the system, and they're working on it, so that's good. But at one point, I think Allison on the show, she was like, oh, I'm sorry, my baby box isn't essential. And that, it definitely shows the bigger picture of, you know, male, you know, prominently white male lawmakers are making laws against women's bodies, but if they had a uterus and they had their periods, they would want to pass laws that were more, you know, more inclusive and allowed for more things, like, you know, if we expand the conversation to abortion and just healthcare in general, because it's a sensitive, you know, sensitive, our bodies are different. Mm-hmm. And a lot of places don't really consider that, because they're either, you know, like the people at Correcticon, they don't care. They're just kind of like off in La La Land, or they're men who don't really realize what women are going through.
Yeah, they've never sat in a place just bleeding.
Yes. That is true. I know. And like, what, 51% of the population of the world are women? So, you know, that's
every month.
Every month, yes. And it's not fun. but yeah, well, if you're a male listening who, you know, maybe doesn't have a wife or a woman in your life that complains about it all the time, it's pretty horrible. I know my husband hears about it from me, but and I'm sure other husbands around the world hear it too, but I've never once made my husband buy tampons, though. I will not make him do that. You guys probably buy tampons for each other, because you just have the same, yeah.
Well, why not?
Why not what? I don't know. I just feel like I would never, I don't know. I'm trying to think. Like, if the roles were reversed, I don't really let Chris do a lot of the grocery shopping.
You buy toilet paper for the house.
I told you my story about toilet paper, right?
No.
This is like totally off topic, but the first time we ever went grocery shopping, my husband's very like mathematically minded. Mm-hmm. You guys know him, but, and we went and I was like, okay, Chris, go get toilet paper and I'm going to go get like whatever, and he was like, okay. So he went to the aisle, and 20 minutes later I come back, I had done all the shopping, and he had his calculator out, and he was calculating what the deal was per square inch of toilet paper per roll. Yes. And I was like, never again are you allowed to go buy toilet paper. So I feel like maybe that's what it is. I would feel like that's what he would be doing with my tampons.
Well, and then maybe in the long run, you'll always have stocked up tampons.
You'll
have saved this much money.
Maybe you look at the product reviews and compare them.
But there are certain tampons I like, so, you know. And they're the more expensive ones. Sorry, they are, but I don't like the paper applicator. You know, but anyway, no one needs to know all that. But, yeah. I mean, I feel like some people ask their husbands or significant others to buy them tampons. And, I mean, that's fine. But I personally just don't. Maybe it's the deal thing. I don't know. but yeah, so the whole thing, the tampons and the maxi pads, you know, what was the one girl was like, oh, I just use one a day. And the other one's like, good luck with that. that's not happening.
No.
But so the
well, you can get infections.
Jesus.
And you can
right.
die. I mean.
Right. Yeah. And at Correcticon, where I don't even know if I'm pronouncing that, I don't really even care, but the convention with all the prison stuff, like, yeah. Caputo's there, and we were kind of talking about it a little bit before, but they have the cup, where it is a thing that women sometimes use because to avoid, you know, throwing tampons away or pads mm-hmm. away, or it's more comfortable for them, yeah. or they only have to do it once a day or whatever. It's something that you, I guess, insert near your cervix, or and it just catches the blood, and you dump it in the shower, which in a prison that kind of sounds gross to me too, but people are pooping in the shower in this episode too, so we have all sorts of bodily stuff going on in the shower. But that was my concern, because I was thinking, I was like, oh, that might be a good idea, but like, some people might not take them out, like they're supposed to be taking them out, and then you have all sorts of infections, and then the, you know, the prison system or the that one guy who's the nurse there who doesn't really seem to care, like, he'd have to deal with all sorts of infections and yeast infections, and, like, no one wants to deal with that while they're in prison.
And also laundry.
And laundry. Yeah, like, that's true too.
In the long run, you know, more detergent.
Mm-hmm.
And more usage of washer dryers.
Mm-hmm.
So
bleach.
Yeah, it just seems like this whole for-profit thing, it's just very short-term, and you don't think about the, you know, extensive costs of it.
Mm-hmm. And in the case where they are thinking of it at Correcticon or whatever, they're thinking about it with the cups, but that's, I mean, and yeah, okay, that's a one-time cost, but like we were saying, all of the health costs associated, infections and all that stuff associated with that, because, you know, some women aren't necessarily, they haven't had that sort of hygiene training in their lives when they've been younger before they get to the prison, or once they get to prison, they're depressed and they don't necessarily do what they need to do for their hygiene. So, and I'm sure that happens with tampons and pads and things too, but with the cup, it's just, to me, that sounds like a nightmare. And that was their solution, because they're so far removed from what's happening that they're like, oh, here's our solution. Because we're a profit-facing company, and we don't care about long-term rehabilitation because we just want the money, which is sad. So at Correcticon, Caputo's out there, and Tasty's back at the ranch, and I was like, I realized when I rewatched the episode, I was like, where did Tasty get that jacket? She has a jacket on. She has like a men's,
yeah.
But like, I don't know where she got it.
I thought she had mentioned that. Like,
oh,
you
did
need to
she?
Buy me a jacket or.
Well, the watch.
Yeah, the watch.
He wanted a watch,
but
then
just pick it up and just wear it.
And then all of a sudden she didn't. But Caputo has his own jacket too, so it's like, yeah, all of a sudden she has this jacket, and I was just like, that's just funny because all of a sudden she has this random jacket. But Caputo's there, and she's at the office, and she's looking at the, you know, the tabloid magazine and hacking into his computer, and I just love her. It's always kind of funny to see her, you know, and she's doing certain things with the power that she's been given. She's looking into the tabloids and celebrity photos, and now we know where the photo came from too, because she sees it. She sees it. Yeah, the drone. Yeah, poor Lolly, because that was, well, we don't see Lolly in this episode, but she was very concerned about that drone before, and it was really
about drones.
Yeah. Well, yes, they're concerning, but then they but now we know where it came from, and it was Judy King's fault, because Judy King is awful. But yeah, so Caputo at the convention. I don't know. What'd you think about that?
I mean, I'm conflicted, because I mean, you know, throughout the episodes, you kind of see Caputo fighting the big man in mm-hmm. prison as the, what is that, the ward? Is he the,
he's now
his role before?
Right.
When Fig was in place.
Piscatella is the old him.
Okay.
Right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, and he's Fig now. Right? Yeah. Or no, he's the warden now. Anyway, he's like head high up.
Yeah. And I kind of felt he always wanted to fight for that. And then he was like, okay, well, our prison's not getting any money. Maybe I'll slip into that role and I can do better.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I mean, are we talking about his inspiration there?
We can talk, yeah, we can talk about that. Mm-hmm.
I'm having a hard time. But I don't know where this is going.
So a lot of stuff happens at that conference, yeah, because we're bombarded by all of these like boos, and he's with Linda, who's a terrible human being, and they're talking about, there's so much stuff that happens, and they're talking about at one point they're looking through like the list of like possible things that they could go to, and one of them is like spinning scandal into Scandalade, which comes into play later on in the season, yes, which is crazy, because you know, this is the second time I'm watching all the episodes, so I'm like, you catch
all
things the second
yeah.
time around, but there's Linda, there's these crazy seminars, there's these awful people that are start trying to sell things, and there's just so much.
Yeah, and there's a speaker
mm-hmm.
who's like
famous or something, like,
yeah,
it's like,
but I didn't know if he actually helped prisoners.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, was he the guy that's just like, okay, I turned this into a for-profit thing, or did he innovate prison life?
I think he just sells himself and his coachings, like it's just like any other big you know, I'm going to promote this because I can make money off of other people saying, what do we do? What mm-hmm. can? And the other thing is, you're also selling it to people from the perspective of, you're going to help lives. Just give me more money and I'll teach you how mm-hmm. you can help lives. And it's, so it's just like, it's kind of creepy because Caputo does care and he's being sold on this idea. Yeah, that
his eyes just go like, whoa, yeah. like this is amazing. I'm going to help everyone. But really he's just kind of keeping everything in the cycle. I forgot what his name was and I didn't even write it down because I was just like, I hated him so much. So I was like, I don't like him. And the guy who's standing, he's kind of like the Tony Robbins of prisons, right? Tony Robbins, that's the guy who's like the motivational speaker. And Caputo is like, has this epiphany where he's going to do, I don't even know if he really talks about it here, but he wants to bring education to the girls, which is great. And it's like a positive thing, but we'll see how that plays out throughout. But that guy, you know, the whole thing just made me feel so dirty. And, I actually looked it up because I was like, do these things really exist? And there was an article that I'll put on the website as well as the post on Hidden Remote, from the New York Times, where they talk about actually going to one of these conventions. And it's kind of the same. I feel like maybe they referenced it when they did the episode, because it's kind of the same thing. They're walking around and looking at all of these different booths and things that are for sale. And
you're always going to have trade shows, and it's always going to be sales motivated. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, I think the consumers are, it's not always the most respectful, mm-hmm. because that's not the focus. The focus is just selling this to people. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of sad. And you can get caught up in that so easily. I mean, we are so good at selling things and advertising and mm-hmm. making you feel like you need to buy something. And we're so trained to respond to all of these bells and whistles that I feel for him in this situation, because I know mm-hmm. it's easy to get caught up in that stuff. And mm-hmm. I feel like we've all kind of been...
Yeah, especially since he seems to have gotten this renewed power and this, you know, because he didn't have the power before.
Right, yeah.
And now he's getting this attention and someone's actually telling him he's doing a good job.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And he didn't get that before.
Mm-hmm.
But,
positive feedback. And,
yeah. It kind of felt like, seeing all this, you know how you go through a museum, like a torture museum, and all those, like, old, like, things how people used to strap each other in, and you're like, wow, I can't believe humanity did this, and then over here, modern day society, we're like, it seems kind of similar.
It is, yeah, and I mean, it's for our own benefit, because all, you know, putting another person, or, you know, I don't want to say shaming, but maybe not shaming, but, you know, putting another person in their place makes us feel powerful, because, you know, if you have power over another human being, and I think Caputo, you know, I've talked about it on the podcast before, but it's hard when you move up the ladder and you get further away from the people that you're supposed to be protecting or serving or counseling or whatever. So it's hard because he still sees, like here, he sees that opportunity to help them with their time. Instead of reducing their time, he's like, I'm going to help them with their time. Because isn't that what the guy says? He's like, we have 17 million zillion hours or whatever. And what are they doing with this time? So Caputo is like, oh, I can help them spend their time better. And he does have good intentions. But then Danny gets up and he's like, here's what's really happening in this prison. And I'm becoming an activist. And it was like DannyTalksTruth.com, which I was so sad wasn't an actual website. Because a lot of times, like Silicon Valley and Veep and a lot of other shows, like, have websites that are, I mean, Silicon Valley, it makes sense because it's a show about Silicon Valley and tech. But I was upset that DannyTalksTruth.com was not an actual website, because I wanted to go on it and see the rantings of Danny. I don't even know what his last name is, but I like him, and he is one of the people on the show that he's actually like, he sees what's happening and he wants to do something about it. And I that whole part, but then Caputo kind of quashes it. He's like, be quiet. And that was a little disheartening, because he wasn't the one who needed to have control over Danny in that moment, but he chose to have control over, or tried to, you know, silence Danny in that moment. Which was unfortunate, because he was talking truth. He said, Sophia's in the shoe, and the women are vomiting from this disgusting food, and what was the other thing there? Oh, they doubled up the beds, and, you know, the quality of life, and Linda was just spouting BS, because she didn't know. She's like, their quality of life is so much better, and it's clearly not. They're not even getting tampons. And so, Danny, yeah. I like Danny.
and when Piscatella tried to call Linda from purchasing.
Oh, right. So that's the Linda. Okay, wow, yeah. I never even made. So, yeah, so that's Linda, and she's not even there because she's off just doing whatever, and she doesn't care about the fact that the ladies don't have tampons or don't eat food that is delicious or, you know, have assistants that they can fire every 2 seconds. Clearly, I don't like Linda. And Danny is just like the opposite. He's like trying to make a difference, which is good.
Well, Danny in the last season, I kind of forgot where he started from and
he how was.
He became, I mean, yeah.
Yeah, he was the guy, MCC, I think, or something like that, is the corporation that owns the prison now, and his dad owns the corporation, and he was kind of like what Caputo is now back then, but then he saw all these things happening, and he was like, screw this, I can't do it anymore. So, he's really in the season, I think that's the only one or two time season, like, he's not really in the season that much, but when he's there, he's, like, very, like, adamant, because he saw what, he was installed in the prison, and he saw what happened, and he got sickened by it, just like most people would, unless they either didn't go to the prison, which eventually we find that out about Linda, that she's never been in a prison.
Well, that's the interesting dynamic there, you know, where he started where Caputo is now, and he went back. And not Caputo start from where he is, and he's going forward. So it's just, like, the different experiences. And Danny is idealistic, but I don't know, Caputo, I kind of hope he holds on to his idealisms and tries to change it from that end.
You know? It would be nice to think that people in power, people who had the power wielded it appropriately and respectfully, but that's not always the case. That's most often not the case. And if they try, like Danny did last season, actually, I think Danny quit last season, but if they try to make a difference, then they, you know, a lot of times you get fired or you get put in your place, and it's just frustrating.
I mean, Caputo is trying, but he, and then I don't know where we're
at with that.
Sometimes it gets, you know, edited by the corporation. So.
That's true, too.
So a good idea could also turn into just a blah, you know, just, you know, have average results. And then it could be saying, well, it didn't work, so why try something like that again? But
right.
Or the mess of, like, okay, we're going to use how the new prison guards came into.
Right.
Litchfield.
Right. They're like, okay, you need new prison guards, and here's the compromise with that. We're going to hire veterans, and we're going to have them live on campus, and we're not going to train them because it's too expensive to train them. And that's actually another link that I'll be putting on the website. Some people who listen to the podcast or are following prison reform may have read Shane Bauer's article in Mother Jones. It's a long but definitely very worth it article to read about his time in a private prison and how they just cut things. They don't really, you know, they're concerned about the bottom line. They're supposed to have 3 months of training. He only got a month of training. So these people on the show, they didn't even get a month of training. They got like 2 seconds of training with Piscatella. So and you know, the guards that were even there before the veterans came on, they got a little bit of training with the seasoned guards, but not a ton. So they're not, you know, I think they got training in season, like, early on in season 3, but it's not nearly enough. And the DOC, actually, according to Bauer's article, requires 90 days of training, I believe, which is, that makes sense. It's like a college, like a semester in college, and you learn, you know, X, Y, and Z. It should probably be even longer than that, but, you know, they can't pay. It's frustrating, but, you know, even for me to be a counselor in Connecticut, I mean, at least in my experience, more and more to be a counselor at a methadone clinic, which is a job that not a ton of people want, you need to have a master's degree, and then you need to ideally have your licensure. So on top of 4 years of college for your bachelor's, then 2 years of college for your master's, and then you need 2 years of experience on top of that. Sometimes you can do it concurrently with your master's, but it's almost 6 to 8 years of training before you can be in direct contact. I mean, you can be in direct contact during that period, but before you can get, you know, say a job, a permanent job, and or before you can be competitive for a job like that. And these people are front lines with some of the prisoners and their
same issues. People dealing, I mean, mental health issues, and people aren't trained in and how to deal with that, how to deal with the different personality types, how to deal with different psychoses, how to deal with different coping mechanisms that people have developed over years of stressful situations. I mean, and I don't know.
We were talking a little bit earlier. I don't know what you termed the school that you, like, what was that school called?
It was a school for students with behavioral and, behavioral problems. So,
okay. So there's no, like, special term for a school like that? Like, I don't know for sure, but.
I don't know if, it wasn't a public school, it was a non-public school. So it's run by a non-profit agency to be kind of the catch for the kids that are coming out of maybe like a residential situation or that are coming from public school special education situations and going towards needing more care. So it was a way to have staff that were trained in behavioral practices and to have more staff per student, whereas in public schools they couldn't always maintain maybe that same level, or they don't have the support. Like, let's say if a kid goes out of control, like, and doesn't.
I know you used to tell me some crazy stories about kids there, and you know, because they couldn't control what they were doing, or you know, they had an episode, or you know, that's tough.
And so you have to be trained. How do you allow that student to be safe, but also protect all the students in the classroom
and yourself?
Well? and staff. And so that takes more staff, and it takes more training, and it takes more patience. I mean, these aren't issues. They didn't develop overnight, and they're not going to go away overnight. But you can make strides. It's just, can you get an environment that allows for it? And that's why that kind of school exists. It's kind of,
and how much training do people have to have to work there?
Well, I mean, you update every year. And, it, you know, there's different levels. You have, so we had a clinical director. I mean, they direct everything that's clinical in the school. They have social workers teams. They have group therapies. They have individuals. And it's all based on what the needs are for the individual kid. And then the teachers all have to, I mean, teachers have to get master's degrees. And, you know, staff has to always show that you're getting certificate. You know, you always have to take different, maybe online classes. You know, there's always something to learn about. And I know the organization always had us doing, we had to do modules online and stuff to keep up on, you know, different things, even just safety protocols. And and you experience it too. You get held and bound as well, just as a student would, so you can feel what it's like.
Yeah, my Ed, who was on the very first podcast here, he's a juvenile probation officer, and he used to have to go to trainings where people would volunteer to get tased or get maced, because those were tactics that they would have to use to control people, and you know, you have to experience that sometimes before you can, you know, tase or mace someone who, because mace is, again, according to that article from Mother Jones, mace is something that a lot of people use in prison settings to control the prisoners. And it's like, you know, I mean, you could use that and get them to act, you know, the way that you want them to act for a very short period of time. Or you could actually sit with them and talk with them and do the hard thing.
Well, and, but I've seen, I mean, I've seen a student get sprayed. I mean, because they would not submit to going down to a precinct, you know what I mean?
Well, like, and you were in a slightly kinder and gentler situation than a prison
situation. Definitely,
And sometimes that's a necessary thing.
Yeah, it was like necessary to get them removed from the situation.
Right.
But it's sad to see a young person in that state, for one.
Right.
And out of control that much. And then also to have to be choking on their own, like to be choking in front of you because of the chemical. I mean, it's not pleasant at all. And of course, we, you know, then you're working in that. You also,
right, because pepper spray doesn't go away.
It doesn't just go away.
Yeah, that's, and you know, it's difficult to think for me too, because I thankfully have always worked in relatively safe environments where I haven't really felt like, I mean, I've been verbally threatened a few times, but no one's ever like, I've been very lucky, because I know that some people, even in situations that I've worked at, have been felt unsafe. And kind of like Piper. We'll talk about Piper in a minute. But felt unsafe in the situation that they've been working in, or felt threatened, or felt that there was violence about to be perpetrated against them. And in this situation, in a prison, it's easy for me as, like, my dad would call me a bleeding heart liberal, but I don't think I'm that liberal. But, you know, someone who's like, everyone should be treated so fine and so well. But these are people who you sometimes use violence as mm-hmm. their means of communication or means of way of getting what they want, or they're emotionally or mentally compromised or, you know, have issues where that's how they get what they want. And we were talking a little bit before and you were like, sometimes you have to consider the staff, and Piscatella is kind of doing that here. And it's easy to hate Piscatella because he's not really, at one point he tells Gloria, he's like, oh, you're an inmate and you look at the person who, you know, did whatever with your rights and look under your boot or whatever. And that's like, oh, I hate that. Like, that's a terrible thing. But also he has to impose order.
And that's my big question too is, yes, you know, we feel for people that are in these situations that have to do time for these things in the past and they have to live with that.
Mm-hmm.
But you also have to feel for the staff that need to be given what they need to be safe
mm-hmm.
in order to create a safe environment as well for those prisoners, and so that they can feel safe and develop to use that time productively mm-hmm. because that's the only thing that you're going to be allowed to do in that time is hopefully develop. That's mm-hmm. that's the goal of rehabilitation,
right?
And but it has to be the right environment, and we forget how dangerous it can be. And it's not always, you know, if you put someone against, you know, if you back someone into a corner,
mm-hmm.
what are they going to do when they've had to survive their whole mm-hmm. time and they're going to use whatever instinct?
Or if you take away their choice, like,
yeah,
we always used to say, like, the methadone clinics I worked at weren't all legally mandated because you can't obviously, well, most of the time you can't legally mandate someone to be on a medication. Sometimes people would try, but the IOP program I worked at, most people were legally mandated. And if backed up into a wall and said, you have to go here, you go to prison, that's not much of a choice. So people don't want to be told what to do. But then if you reframe it like a choice, like, okay, well, it's your choice to do X, Y, and Z, and we're going to work with you, and you can
choice
do it.
Choice is amazing.
It is.
It puts you in a mindset where you're using your brain. It's not mm-hmm. it's not your animal brain where you have no choice, and it's a reaction. Mm-hmm. Instead, it's a thoughtful. And I always did it with students. I would say, I will not touch you,
mm-hmm.
but we can't be here.
Mm-hmm.
So you can move here or we have to touch you.
Mm-hmm.
And honestly, as long as you catch someone before they go into that
animal
state where mm-hmm. they're just going to react, you can kind of calm people down and get them to a safer spot, even though they're upset.
Mm-hmm.
You can then start talking about it and learn coping skills. But it's
right.
Like, I think it's just really important that we think about the environment, and are we allowing people to use their brain, and are we, I don't know.
That's
just
that's a great way of putting it too, like the animal brain versus like the rational brain.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure there's like a whole brain. I'm not totally up on my neuroscience, but I'm going to get my sister in here to talk about all the neuroscience stuff. There are different parts, and like there are different ways that we'll react. And that's a really, I really like that way of putting it, because if you're like, if you dictate to someone what they need to do, and I've seen counselors do that, and people get mad if they're getting told. I don't like getting to. I mean, no
that's,
one likes
that's
getting
authority
told.
Too. I mean,
yeah,
we, and especially a society, we don't like authority telling us
mm-hmm.
what to do. We're individuals, you know. We're gonna pick our life. We're gonna live the way we want to.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, so authority doesn't work so well. You have
mm-hmm.
to be kind of like a voice of reason. You kind of have to appeal to motivation of the person. Like,
mm-hmm.
What are their goals? What do they really want?
Mm-hmm.
And how can we help you achieve that instead of, you
mm-hmm.
better get in line.
Do it or else.
Yeah.
Yeah. I know Chan doesn't like to be told what to do. And Carly, you probably know that.
I don't either. It's one of our biggest fights. Yeah.
No, but no one, I mean, you know, even if you're, well, the Chanager used to be, well, you never told what people what to do when you were the Chanager, really. You would just get mad.
Yeah.
But, I mean, people don't. And even if you give people an illusion of choice, it's a little different. And Piscatella, I mean, I think that's probably another thing that makes me angry about Piscatella, because he's not really... He wants to impose order, which I've been having an issue. And the third episode, I talked to Jillian, who had worked with... She kind of sympathized with Piscatella's
mm-hmm.
situation, where
mm-hmm.
she was like, well, but there has to be that dynamic there. There has to be
yeah.
that, like, I'm in charge and you're...
That's why I would suggest talking to someone who's kind of, like, in that situation, because
mm-hmm.
you also have to think about that it creates safety for
mm-hmm.
not only guards, but for them. Because...
Mm-hmm.
If you if you, you have to create this order and a system of orderliness, because when your world is out of control, you need to take control somehow. So you mm-hmm. you need things to be in control in order so that you're not going to act out in a way. So, I mean, there's different things that we need as humans, and I feel mm-hmm. like you have to really look at the situation, what people are dealing with.
Kind of like the food chain, sort of, like, right? Like some sort of the overarching
hierarchy of needs.
Right.
And mm-hmm. safety is a big one. And mm-hmm. if safety means that I get up every day at this time and I do this exact procedure, I stand up. I mean, there's something beneficial about discipline. Discipline can make you feel safe and can mm-hmm. can give you calm and peace.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's important. It's not necessarily mean or draconian mm-hmm. to have discipline and to have order and to have people doing the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
So, I sympathize with that need. Yeah. And sometimes it's imposed in ways that we don't always think is so nice.
Mm-hmm.
But honestly, I'd rather someone be harder on me than nice to me if it means I'm going to be safe, I'm going to be able to at least express myself in some way or, have some outlet. And that's why I think you have to have those additional
clear lines, black and white.
Mm-hmm.
And
Makes it easier.
But then it, does that breed that major divisiveness? I mean, obviously, these are two different roles. There's prison guards and there's, prisoners.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to have a divide,
mm-hmm.
A fine line. But it's when it becomes, you don't see them as human beings anymore.
Mm-hmm. Right.
The problem. Yeah.
And that's definitely true, because Piscatella is basically just, you're an inmate, and that's what he calls all of them. He doesn't even call them, like Caputo calls them by their last names.
Yeah.
But maybe he does that to protect himself from growing too fond, from getting tricked, manipulated in some way.
Right.
Maybe that's his way of
That's true. Manipulation is a big thing.
It can happen.
People don't really think about, yeah. Especially
this is where Piper tries to come in and...
Right. Yeah. And she tries to manipulate him. Yeah. And I mean, we've seen a lot of the guards manipulating, like Porn Stash. Like, whoever thought we'd miss Porn Stash, but we miss Porn Stash. But I miss all the guards, too. I mean, all those guards are... they weren't necessarily the best. Like, we didn't really love them while they were there, but now they're gone. We miss them.
And you're like, wow, they were so much better than these guys.
Yeah. They were. And and we only see them for, a small amount of time. At the very beginning, we see two of them, the couple. I don't even know what their names are, but the bigger guy and and the woman. And that's it. And then we don't see... we do see one of them much later. But I'm hoping, because I think this season was... it was a very short period of time this season, I think. I haven't found that or not or anywhere. Found exactly how long the season was. But I'm hoping maybe they'll come back next season. But maybe not. We'll see. But they didn't necessarily treat the inmates the best, but they knew what they were doing, and they knew the inmates really well, and they knew how to impose order without it feeling like it was punitive. Like it was an order that made sense. Mm. So, yeah. But Piscatella and Piper, like you guys brought up, Piper's trying to... she's trying to manipulate Piscatella. And we find out that he's gay, which is, kind of a big surprise because he's this, big guy. But he's, just like... I think just like any race or gender or sexuality, sometimes you get horrible people. Like, that's a certainty among all of... And Piscatella is not really the best. But it is a big surprise, and the line he says, I think, does he say it in this episode? Or maybe he says it in another one about his beard. He might say it in a different episode, but I had two beards at my prom, one on my face and one on my arm, and it's the funniest thing we've heard Piscatella say. But he and Piper kind of have this alliance, and she tries to woo him over and manipulate him, but he shuts it down real quick. And it's an interesting alliance.
Yeah. The prison gang. It's like what you're describing as a prison mm-hmm. gang, Piper.
Mm-hmm.
And
it kind of is. It kind of like they're congregating and they're illegal activity. I mean, Piper is too, granted.
But it became even more after that.
Right. Yeah. That's true. Yeah. And Piper tries to get the community carers, which that's the worst.
That's like Care Bear.
Yeah, like scare. Community. And who thought that was a good, I don't know. And so only white people show up because I don't really know why. Maybe because of the speech Piper gives to the girl at the porta potties. Like, I'm not sure, because she's like, you spelled it wrong, and then they talk, and then maybe she brings her group of white supremacists, and then it kind of just snowballs from there. But I can understand why none of the Dominican girls are there, because they don't like Piper, but like some other ethnicities, but she ends up with just white people somehow. Somehow that just ends up with just them, and some horrible things happen in that meeting that Piper are kind of beyond Piper's control.
Yeah, I just liked how everyone was just watching, or was it Morella and the two people in the audience?
Angie, is Angie the one? No, that's not Angie. The one with the scarred neck. I can't remember her name, but she just looks and she's just like, oh boy, this is just not uprising. White Lives Matter, which is, you know, it's definitely topical because of what has been going on in our society with the All Lives Matter hashtag that people have been using in response to the Black Lives Matter hashtag. And I'm not sure if the two of you have seen the comparisons online, and it's like, All Lives Matter, you know, of course All Lives Matter, right? But Black Lives Matter, it's if you were a fireman and you saw two houses and one was on fire and one wasn't, like, you would you say, like, all houses matter? Or would you say, like, that house matters right now because that house is the one on fire? Yeah. And I really love that comparison because it makes so much sense.
Yeah.
And so, but Piper is, I mean, in prison right now, it's not... Well, there is a disparity in terms of, and we'll get into that in future episodes, actually, there's a disparity in terms of, you know, the people that are arrested, people of color that are arrested, mm-hmm. versus people, white people that are arrested, and that's something that's a big concern. I know this is something that I'm looking into a little bit more, but I don't know if you guys have heard that since Colorado legalized marijuana, the arrests for white people or white youths have gone way down, but the arrests for black and Latino, black specifically, and youths have gone way up, like significantly up, which is... It shows that we have a problem, like a systemic... I mean, that's just one study out of many that show that we have this systemic problem where minorities are not necessarily treated as fairly as white people are. So, but how did you... I mean, that's pretty... That last scene where all the prisoners are rising up and screaming White Lives Matter is a pretty horrific... or pretty like stomach-dropping scene. And I don't know, what did you guys think when you saw that?
Feel like it's pretty,
yeah,
like
the slippery slope human, into that was very like easy, like just
it was easy, yeah, that's easy. A good point. Mm-hmm.
Just bringing up, you know, these issues of us and them,
mm-hmm. yeah,
was it just went
and what does it is insecurity. I mean, mm-hmm. the more insecure people are, the more they're gonna band together and blame other people mm-hmm. for their position and play victims and mm-hmm. and therefore, you know, create these lines
mm-hmm.
instead of seeing the other as it being in their situation as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
people don't really love, they don't love change. These are things that I know from, I mean, just from life, but also being a counselor. People don't like change. Change is scary. And also things that are different are scary because we have to like actually invest time and effort into learning about other people and what they're doing and all of that. But you know, if you're so entrenched in your own way of life, then you don't really have, or if you feel fearful from other people coming in and taking your power, which a lot of, you know, a lot of the Caucasian women or white women in the prison are probably from lower income places where they feel like they don't really have a lot of agency or power. So it's easy to kind of say, like, we're better because we're a certain race, or we're better because we're a certain way, and these people are don't deserve as much, because then it gives you a little bit of feeling like you have control, which a lot of people in poverty don't necessarily feel that way. And not to assume, like, I love the part in the episode where Piper's like, Piscatella's like, you should only salute if you're in the army or whatever. And Piscatella's like, and Piper's like, how do you know I'm not? And Piscatella's like, oh. And so, you know, we're assuming that all these women are, I mean, maybe they're all, you know, I don't think so. But you know, there's a lot of assumptions going on when you kind of vilify an entire race just for the color of their skin. So. Yeah.
And she really just did it to get back at her
profits. Right, right. But like you said, it snowballed, like, so it's, quick.
Yeah. It just went right there. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so, I mean, this episode is definitely, you know, it's... Oh, well, in addition, one of the things I did miss is the community carers, and we talked a little bit about it at the beginning, I think, with Ramos, but the stop and frisk policy start, which was a big thing, and yes, probably continues to be a thing in cities and around the country, because, you know, most of the time here, they're profiling Dominicans, and most of the time, again, profiling people who are not white. So it's definitely an issue that we need to talk about, and these episodes are bringing up. So, yeah. So, and we, I didn't let you guys know, because it was so funny. The third episode, I started doing a thing at the end where we were talking about pop culture references in the episodes, and then the next episode, the fourth episode, had, like, no pop culture references, and then this episode, I think, only had one, or maybe two. There was one where Brooke, who, she's so cute, oh, and she tries to help Alita, and she's just like, you do this and this and this and this and this, and Alita's like, I didn't learn anything. Like, what are you doing? Yeah. But she said, what'd she say? She was like, I never liked Hello Kitty because she didn't have a mouth. And I was like, oh, that's funny. I never really thought about the fact that Hello Kitty didn't have a mouth. But that was my favorite pop culture reference in this episode. But I think that's pretty much it. Do you guys think we missed anything? We'll go over everything?
No, they talked about Morello and Crazy
Eyes. Oh, yes.
Mm-hmm. Little detective work there.
We did miss that. I know, they did. And I love their relationship because they're both, like, kind of unhinged in, like, different ways, but they're both, like, so in love with love, like, the idea of, like, having a partner and, like, being with someone, and they get along in this really weird way that I really like, and that they decide to, like, band together to find the shower pooper. And they're very cute together. I could probably watch a whole episode with just the two of them doing things, but, yeah, but we didn't really talk, because there's only, like, a small, but you only see them for, like, very short periods of time, but they're always working together, which is, like, adorable. But yeah, I think that's it for this week. And so you can find us on Twitter at You've Got Time Pod, on Facebook at facebook.com/You've Got Time Podcast, and email us at You've Got Time Podcast@gmail.com. And thanks, guys. We'll see you next week.
Thank you.
Yay.